If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
So you're always looking to kind of churn things, which is legit, and there's nothing wrong with it because you're actually still making a lot of money for your investors. So, you know, I don't begrudge any sponsor that does that. That's fantastic.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Steve Breton has invested in over 2,000 apartment units and has a diverse real estate experience. He often speaks at national real estate conferences and has been interviewed on numerous podcasts. He's a real estate coach where he teaches others how to invest in large multifamily properties for cash flow. He has an MBA from Babson College's Olin School of Business and is an overall great guy. Steve, hey, thanks for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure, Sam. Thank you.
Hey, man, the pleasure's all mine. You know, same questions I ask everybody who comes on board is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So starting point was back in 2011. I started to look at multifamily, you know, duplexes in my area. I live in Boston.
Okay.
And the reason there was really having been crushed in 2008 in the stock market. And finally, my balances were starting to come back up to where they were pre-2008. Still not quite there yet. And I was just thinking, you know, I need to take my money out of this. I can't, you know, suffer another downturn like that. And then started looking into, again, you know, buying a duplex nearby. I finally pulled the trigger on actually it was a triplex. It was the first one I found that actually made sense. But then shortly thereafter, you know, within a few years, it was, you know, another duplex, another triplex, until I got to 16 units and was self-managing. But I also had full-time job and everything else going on with the kids. So I couldn't continue to scale in that self-management and with as many units as I already had. So a friend of mine introduced me to syndication or investing passively with somebody else, a sponsor. And so I did that for a while and I realized this is pretty good. I don't have to actually self-manage and I can make pretty much the same amount of returns on my money. So I started to sell off my properties in Boston, invest strictly in syndications. And a few years later, I realized that I could probably be the sponsor. I had learned a ton just in my own management and then from these sponsors. So I decided to give that a whirl, partnered up with one of the sponsors that I knew pretty well and kind of learned the ropes that way and never looked back.
That's fantastic. So at what point in time did you step out of the full-time job?
So in 2017 is when I started to build my business. And by early 2019, I stepped away from the W-2 job, which was a, you know, fairly high paying IT job in biotech companies.
Wow. Wow. So you left your job for financial security then?
Yeah, it was financial security, time freedom, you know, all the things that I thought I wouldn't have until I was like 65, 70 years old, if then. But once I got into real estate, I started to realize that it was going to happen a lot quicker if I was willing to take the, you know, the risk, I guess, of going it alone.
Right, right. Man, that's awesome. So you decided, I like your journey's unusual in that most of the time people scale, they find a few units, and then they sell all those and go into something bigger. But for you, your version of going into something bigger was being a passive investor. And then from passive investor, you said, wait, I can do this. I can run my own show.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. And then just to highlight again how you did that, you partnered with one of the sponsors that you had previously been passively investing with.
Right. Yeah.
That's cool. How did that conversation happen? And what was the reception like to your idea? And how did that shake out?
I should clarify. There was a few sponsors that I was working with as a passive investor.
Sure.
And again, the returns were great. And it did make sense for me to keep holding my own assets and also the time that was taking. Again, one of my goals was time freedom. So I didn't want to have to be beholden to my tenants when they needed something, whether it was repair of the property or something else. So I started to have discussions with the sponsors that I was invested with and trying to make, you know, we're just starting to figure out how we were going to work together. Those deals didn't actually come to fruition. There was another sponsor I was talking to along the way. I hadn't yet invested with them. I was going to on their next deal. And the next deal came around, but because of these other conversations we were already having, it was like, let's just partner together.
Mm.
So yeah, it was more like conversations about how can I help you? You know, what value can I bring? And I told him I had a pretty good network of high net worth individuals just based on my job and the location that I'm at, here in the country, Northeast, typically a bit wealthier area. So, there was that, there was my analytical skills, et cetera. So we kind of put that all together and figured out how I could help. And that first deal came along and we jumped on it together.
That's fantastic. So you came along, obviously, with some skills you're bringing to the table outside of capital, but then also came along as a capital partner, maybe on one of your first deals out of the gate.
Yeah. And I flew out and did due diligence, and I'm involved in the property management calls because I did have that self-management experience. That was a bit helpful as well. I was able to guarantee the loan. Mm. So a bunch of things that just help that partner to go into bigger assets that they hadn't yet gone into, right? So together we scaled up into things that we wanted to go to.
That's interesting. Okay. So this partner wasn't out doing the size of deals necessarily that you wanted to do, but you both had aims for going bigger.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was definitely ahead of me, had already done some larger things, but not the 150 that we both wanted to get to, or 200 units.
Right. What are some things you learned in that process partnering up with two, somebody else that's ahead of you maybe, but again, you're bringing a lot of skills to the table too. So what were some things you learned in that process as you guys kind of organically grew that?
Yeah. We both kind of underwrote things in a different way, also using different tools. But so I think we learned a bit from each other from that perspective, where I was back on some areas where I thought maybe were too aggressive. I was being conservative because I was basically, quite frankly, afraid. I didn't want to make a mistake. And then he taught me, these areas are okay. You're going to push a little bit this way. It's still actually conservative. And he showed me why. So there's some areas like that. Like I was adding buffers on top of buffers, contingency on top of contingency. And at that point, you're just, you're underpricing or undervaluing the deal, and you're never going to actually win the bid for it. And then, there's other areas where I was probably being maybe too aggressive. Maybe I wasn't researching my rent comps enough and thought I could get more rent than I could. But again, he actually lived in the market. He knew that area inside and out. He had rentals there. So, it really just overall showed me all the different pieces that you have to be very careful about in your underwriting. And then the other thing was just showing me how to, the business processes. How do you actually run a syndication business? Everything from the syndication attorneys, how you're doing due diligence on 150 units, how to work with your investors, all that stuff, the platforms, the CRM. And, at every step, I'm like, how do you do this? How do you do this? And they were more than happy to tell me, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great way to learn from somebody else. And at the same time, obviously build your own credibility
right
in the market. What was it like raising capital for maybe some of your first few deals? Talk to us about that process.
Yeah, I had downloaded the syndicated deal analyzer from one of the gurus out there. And part of that came with videos, how do you do syndication? How do you do your analysis? And one of the things that they always pushed was going and doing a sample deal. So putting together a small presentation, 10 pages in a PowerPoint, where you're talking to your friends and family and saying, hey, I'm looking for a property that looks something like this. It's going to be 100 units or so. It's going to have X returns, and it's going to be in the South, which is different than where I am up in the Northeast. There's better cash flow. It's a bit more business friendly, et cetera. So I explained all of those things to, I probably had 30 conversations with different friends and family. And, majority of them said that they would be interested in something like this. At the time, I had nothing to offer them. I wasn't pressuring them. It wasn't really a sales pitch. It was just a conversation. And I also, most importantly, I wasn't desperate at that moment for somebody to invest in my deal. Otherwise, I was going to lose the deal. So I didn't wait until the point where I really had to raise the capital. It was just casual conversations. But sure enough, there was plenty of people who were interested. So when that first deal did kind of come to fruition, we put it all together. I put it back in front of them and it looked almost identical, right? Same package, similar returns. It was just the property pictures were a bit different. So it was very simple to kind of walk through that. And again, a lot of it is they were just trusting in me, and they knew that I was in business for a long time. I had an MBA. I was involved in the finances of these large IT projects, and that I also had been self-managing properties for a long time. So I was able to check a lot of those boxes. And then most importantly, I was able to point to my partner and say, look, this guy's done more than I have. And he's actually in the market and we're partnering together. So there's that shared credibility as well.
Right. Man, you bring up so many good points there, Steve. The one I liked was that when you guys, you said you weren't desperate for capital. When you went to these investors, it's a conversation. I'm not even selling you anything. It is, hey, this is maybe, you know, what a deal could look like. If it's interested, I'll present one to you. And if not, you know, right, no worries. But that's a very different conversation than, oh man, we've got 40 days to get $5 million in the till so that we can close.
Yeah. And I've had people come to me as when I was just a passive investor, which I still actually invest passively in, and it still happens. People come to me and it's like, I need this right away. You know, we're closing soon and we haven't raised all the capital. Can you help? And I'm like, why haven't you raised the capital? You know, immediately my alarm bells, you know, or the radar goes up. It's like, is this not a good enough deal that you weren't able to raise enough capital? Like, what's going on here exactly? Or were you not prepared? Did you not do your homework? You know, didn't you plan out these activities? So, you know, like 1,000 things go through my mind that tell me you probably don't want to invest in this deal. And it may be a fantastic deal. And it may be, you know, lots of good reasons. But the second that you get a sniff of desperation in there, it's like, you know, maybe I don't want to be involved.
Right, man. That's really, really, yeah, it's a valid point. And yeah, it comes from experience, I'm certain. So the other cool thing that I like that you said was that people have to trust, they're trusting you. Like, you can sell a deal all day with great returns, but, mm-hmm. and we hear this over and over, is that our investors are trusting us. Like, they may look at that term sheet and go, okay, that sounds good, but I trust Steve. And so that's why I'm investing in the deal. And the other thing I liked you said was that you're using your partner's track record when you were starting out.
Sure.
I mean, because if your partner's ahead of you, then you, and they're a valid part of the team.
Right.
So you're not saying, oh, hey, here's a guy that, you know, I know that's in the business and I call him occasionally. It's like, this is part of our team and this is how we're taking this down.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. And so have you ever had, I guess, what are some success or some things that you've done when raising capital outside of that, maybe that have helped those conversations go over smoothly outside of maybe doing those things or anything else that you could point to and say, hey, this is what's helped us really raise capital?
It's interesting. A lot of it has been, I go to the local meetups here in our area. And with COVID, I've actually been to meetups that aren't so local to me, which has been nice, right? Because everybody went onto Zoom. It was all remote. So you're able to kind of join different areas and meet new people. But in the Boston area, when I was going to these meetups, I was known as a guy who owned a bunch of twos and threes, right? Small multifamily. And even though I had moved on from that and I was starting to syndicate and I was doing much larger properties, and even today after over 2,000 units in syndication, you know, 10 different deals sponsored as a syndicator, I'll still be in the room and somebody's talking about buying their first duplex. And they're like, I don't know if this is a good deal. I'm really nervous. And I'll just offer whatever advice I can, or I'll meet them for lunch, or, you know, they're talking about their goals. I'll be like, all right, let's go have coffee and talk about goals. So trying to be of value in any way that I can, and having these discussions with people. And I'm not doing it for any reason other than it feels like I'm giving back, and I enjoy having the conversations. It makes me think a bit more about what I'm doing as well. But sometimes it's like, you know, they keep looking for that duplex and they can't find it. And eventually they just throw their hands up and say, you know, maybe I'll just go into syndication and as a LP, limited partner, invest passively and not deal with all the headaches. Or they buy that duplex and after a while they decide to sell it. They take their profits and they don't want to be self-managing.
Right, man, that's super valid. So you guys have now closed 2,000 syndicated units, which is awesome. What does the future hold for you guys? What if you were to project 3 years out, what do you want Velocity Capital to look like?
That's a good question. So, you know, I am in my early 50s now. I proved everything I had to prove in terms of building businesses and massive projects and managing huge amounts of money in the corporate world. And I really feel like, you know, I don't have anything to prove. I'm not trying to scale up and you know, I don't have these goals of I need to have 1,000 units under contract this year or anything like that. So to me, it's really, I'm investing primarily on my own account. I want to make sure that my dollars are well invested. And then my friends and family join me in those investments as well. So I feel that burden of making sure that everything I've already done, the deals we have under management today, they have to operate smoothly. They have to deliver in the way that we put forth in our packages early on when we first got into the deal. So those returns have to be there. The communications have to be there. So that's my number one priority, is making sure everything's operating well. And if we can find, you know, 1, 2, maybe 3 deals per year, if they come about, great. But they have to be really good deals.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to the thing that you said that you wanted in the very beginning, which was really your time freedom. Mm-hmm. So for you guys, it sounds like you've hit that where you've made your time freedom. And at this point, you're willing just to not sit back, but you're willing to take the success that you've had and enjoy it.
Exactly. Right. If you're constantly chasing deals and you have these big lofty goals of we have to have X number of units closed this year, or if you're not quite there with the time freedom or the financial freedom, and you're, so at that point, you're more transaction focused. You're like, I have to do transactions. I have to get my acquisition fee. I have to get my equity at the end when I sell a property. So you're always looking to kind of churn things, which is legit. And there's nothing wrong with it because you're actually still making a lot of money for your investors. So, you know, I don't begrudge any sponsor that does that. That's fantastic. I did a few of those to start off as well. It's just that now I'm at the point where I don't have to be transaction focused, which happens to also coincide in a time where the market is just absolutely nuts right now. Coming out of COVID, everything's just crazy expensive. So it's nice to be able to sit back a little bit and not be too concerned about whether or not we get a deal done in the next 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. If you guys can just stand on the sidelines and watch however the game plays out, play out. That's a great place to be. So I guess with that, then, are you guys, because prices are high and things like that, I've heard from a lot of people that they're becoming net sellers, but it sounds like for you guys, your intention is just to buy and hold in perpetuity. Is that fair?
No, I could see how you might think that based on what I was saying. It's funny because, you know, one of the things with these syndicated kind of projects, investors typically aren't looking to be invested with you forever. A lot of times, especially the newer folks that haven't come in as a passive investor, if you put in front of them, you know, we're going to hold this thing 10 to 15 years. They're like, that's a long time for me to have my money locked up. And it just makes them a bit nervous, especially if they haven't had that track record of just sitting back and collecting the cash flow. So, you know, generally you're telling them it's, you know, 5 years or so, maybe 7 years. And then the other thing is that, you know, because it is such a nutty time, we're getting offers that are our 5 or 7 year numbers. And we're only, you know, 2.5, 3 years into our hold period. And it's like, if I can get the IRR that I'm hoping for in 5 or 7 years today, maybe it does make sense to sell, right? And you know, I'm only 3 years into syndication. So the other aspect of that is let's give people some massive returns early on and really have them feeling confident that we can deliver. So, you know, from a business development perspective, it's also not a bad thing. The only challenge there is where do you put your money once you've cashed out?
Right. Yeah, that's an extremely valid point. Yeah, where do you put it when it's done? But like you said, you can hit your 7 year IRR 3 years in. I mean, that does make a lot of really happy investors. So
right,
and makes your track record look incredible. Yeah. That's awesome, Steve. If you could rewind the tape, and I know it's not that long, but just a few years, is there anything that you would do differently?
Of course, you know, everybody says they would have started earlier, and I had thoughts about doing this, you know, years and years ago. I guess the one thing would be to be careful of who you listen to. Mm. So I have friends that are attorneys, not necessarily real estate attorneys, but they're just attorneys. Unfortunately, they are always preparing for the worst. That's their job, right? They have to think of every bad scenario possible. And they told me, like, you're going to be competing against institutions and guys who've been doing this forever. And, you know, how can you compete with that? And if you do get a deal under contract, you're probably going to be overpaying and all these things that can go wrong with partnerships. And I'm like, oh my God, I better not do this. And I literally, you know, paused for about 2 years from when I started to, you know, wanting to do it. I completely shut it down because of all that advice I got. And it was all well-intentioned. You know, they're just looking out for my best interest. They're great people, still great friends with them today. But if I could undo anything, it would have been to say, okay, thanks for that. Now I'll be that much more careful, but I'm still moving forward.
Mm, yeah, I've not heard that one before, but you're absolutely right. It is sometimes those voices closest to us that we have to tune out, unfortunately, when we know what we're doing is the right path. So that's that's a hard lesson, but a good one. Thanks for sharing that. Let's jump here to the final four. The first question is this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
So I would say whether it's a passive investor or somebody who wants to be a sponsor and have probably even more so for a sponsor who's going to have his friends and family investing with them, is to get educated. You have to get out there, whether it's paying for education, watching a ton of podcasts, YouTube videos, et cetera. There's so many ways at this point where you can get free information or paid. It doesn't make sense for you to try to move forward in this space without really understanding what you're doing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there's no excuse for ignorance in this day and age.
Yeah.
In the real estate space. So that's a great piece of advice. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you were doing to stay on top of your game?
I typically look more at financial news these days, and I'm on, you know, Twitter watching all the top players in the finance and investing space. It's not even real estate based. You know, I want to know where interest rates are going. I want to know if this money printing is going to lead to inflation or not. And I'm getting all these different opinions, which helps me in my underwriting on the real estate side.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
I'm invested in a couple of nonprofits in terms of investing my time. I spend a lot of time with our local charity, which is it's mostly a food pantry where I'll do deliveries to homebound citizens in the area. So I'm on the board of directors there. And then there's another project. It's the Kafui Foundation, which is in Africa. It's basically maintaining some wildlife preserve and ensuring that that's there for future generations.
Right, man. That's cool. That is very cool. Fantastic. Steve, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Just visiting our website at velocitycap.com. That's short for Velocity Capital.
Wonderful. Steve, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.